Chapter 80, I Marry a Nicaraguan. I had stopped roller skating for several months due to my motorcycle accident, but by the time I got to Miami, I was pretty much back to normal and checking out South Beach on my skates every day. And one morning, I'm skating on the main sidewalk that runs along the ocean on Ocean Drive, go figure. And I spot a very sexy Latina walking all by herself and minding her own business when I decide to change her life. No, just kidding. Not. Anyway, I'm cruising along, and I see this, I just got to have her, young, hot, sexy Latina chick, and I skate up to her and engage her in conversation. We hit it off, and what can I say? Within a month, we were married. I kid you not. Okay, fine. I had a mental problem. Go ahead and say it. Anyway, she moved in with me almost right away, and a month later, we went to a Miami Beach courthouse and tied that old knot. Was I insane? Certainly. But again, I was just being me, crazy as I was. What's that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? Anyway, her name was Miriam Aguilar, and Miriam was a Nicaraguan girl who came to the United States as a political refugee. Her status was that she was permitted to remain in the U.S., could get a driver's license, etc., but if she ever left the United States, she couldn't get back in because she would lack a visa. Getting married doesn't get you an automatic visa, by the way. You have to apply for that. And I bring that up because later we would face this dilemma. I got the following from Wikipedia. The Sandinista revolution that started in the mid-70s and the Contra War that followed brought the first large waves of Nicaraguan refugees into the United States. As a result of the deprivatization reforms under the FSLNS's rule from 79 to 1990, the first wave of approximately 120,000 Nicaraguans left Nicaragua and entered the United States. Miriam lived with her relatives in a Miami suburb, about a 20-minute drive from South Beach, and we would visit them from time to time, and they totally accepted me into their family. The following page is a picture of Miriam and me walking along the ocean in South Beach, and then some shots we did for her model composite card. Miriam would later appear on the cover of Thai Penthouse magazine, shot on an island by me in Thailand in 1994, and in a Playboy publication called Sexy Latin Ladies, which she got while we were living in Los Angeles in 1996. Scrolling down here, I got a lot of photos in this book. Okay, that's the end of the chapter. And have a good one. Okay, moving along here, chapter 81. Nicaragua and I moved to Bangkok. Pretty soon after we got married, I told Miriam that Miami is okay, but it's sort of a small town, and why don't we move to New York? I think you'll love it there. I could pick up my acting career where I left off, and Miriam, with her sex appeal, could have success of some sort. And New York was so great to me last time, why not try it again? I loved living in New York and had a lot of great memories. I think that I lived in Miami for all of around 6 months at the most when Miriam and I, come on, Brad, you decided to move to New York. It was you who decided to move to New York, not Miriam. So we fly to Kennedy and on into Manhattan, and now what? The problem was we had barely any money and no one to turn to, such as I had the last time that I had arrived at Kennedy right out of the blue from Paris that time. I couldn't call my grandparents this time around because they were no longer with us. They were up there. I would have, though. I miss you, Grandma and Grandpa, and I'll always love you, and I'll never forget you. I wish you were still here. But luckily, I can still talk to you, and I know when I do, you hear me. That first night in New York, we found the cheapest room we could find, which was somewhere near Times Square, and we ended up with the cheapest, crappiest, scariest room ever, and actually had to pay for the room through a hole in a very thick, bulletproof window. Compare that to $7 a day for that charming little room in Paris. I rest my case. After we did the payment through the whole thing, we continued up the stairs and into the room, and let me tell you, it was one very dirty and very scary room with a lot of Times Square ghosts in it. I'm pretty sure anyway. That room was a nightmare, and in fact, we slept in our clothes and our shoes. So in one fell swoop, we had gone from living in a nice apartment on Ocean Drive in fabulous South Beach, where I was shooting photos of pretty girls for very good money, to a filthy, scary hotel room in expensive New York with zero prospects on the horizon. Hey, nice move, Brad. You've done it again. Well, you just can't go home again, and I know that for a fact because I've tried to so many times in so many countries. The magic that showed up in that place at that time never shows up again. I tried to recover the past in Paris and Hong Kong and now in New York, and it just don't work. The past is gone forever, however much you may miss it, and you just can't get it back. So the next day I told Miriam that we just didn't have enough money to stay in New York, and I told her that we could go to Bangkok as I had connections there and that she'd love it there. And her reply to me was, and I'll never forget this, but I won't be able to get back into the USA because I don't have a visa. And I said exactly this, don't worry, I'll get you back in. You see, just because you get married to, say, a Nicaraguan girl with no visa, she doesn't get an automatic visa. We would have had to apply for one in Miami. That would have meant standing in a very long line to apply for the visa and then waiting weeks for the decision. And I was too damn impatient for that, which would later come back to haunt us, by the way. So Thailand it is. But before leaving for Thailand, I wanted to make a sales call on a magazine called Oriental Dolls, which was actually on Broadway and pretty close to our very fine hole-in-the-window hotel. So I made the sales call. I met the woman who ran the magazine by the name of Pat Reshin, who was a very with it and nice lady, and I told her that I would be living in Bangkok and that I could possibly be a source of photos of Asian honeys for their magazine. So we exchanged contact info, and that was that. The other minor problem was that we really didn't have enough money to fly to Bangkok and get a room once we got there. So I went to the nearest pawn shop and sold my one and only camera for $150, which meant I wouldn't have a camera for work once we got there, but at least we could get there. Brilliant, Brad. Brilliant. After pawning the camera, I bought a couple of one-ways to Bangkok, and away we went. I want to point out and underline the fact that everything you read here, as preposterous as it may seem, is absolutely true. I'm not making any of this up, nor embellishing anything for effect. What I write here is verbatim, and I mention that once again because when you read this stuff, you might not believe me because I can hardly believe it myself, even though it happened to me, but I can assure you that I'm not making any of this stuff up. I know this behavior of mine sounds nuts, but what you read here is true. And I was nuts, but I survived and I'm happier for all that craziness. And that's the end of the chapter, folks. Chapter 82. We get the Thai penthouse cover. I dedicate this chapter to the memory of my late friend, Jeremy Taylor. May you rest in peace, Jeremy, and I'm sorry about our fallout. The first thing we did upon arriving in Bangkok that July of 1994 was to rent a room at a place called Freddy's Guest House for all of around $3 a day. The second thing I did was to call my Thai celebrity buddy and tell him that I had just arrived with my new hot Nicaraguan wife and did he have any ideas for me to make some money right away, and he told me to call Thai Penthouse Magazine. They may have something. This was the same guy who I had shot for that GM magazine cover and that I had met in the hospital that day to edit the GM magazine slides while his wife was down the hall having a baby. Remember him? Well, anyway, he told me that he had been the editor at Penthouse Magazine, but quit because he said that he had been invited by Guccione himself to visit him in New York and stay at his mansion there, but that the Thai owner of Penthouse Magazine refused to let him go, telling him that they needed him in the office, so he quit the job. Anyway, he gives me the owner's name and phone number, and I call the guy and tell him that I'm a photographer and I have a beautiful model with me, and would he see me? He tells me to come right over, and so we go there, and he couldn't take his eyes off of sexy Miriam, absolutely mesmerized by her look, and says, there's a crew going to a photo shoot for us tomorrow to an island, and you could join them and shoot Miriam while they shoot their model. So I agree, and he arranges for us to get picked up the following day by the van driver of the other crew. My problem was that I didn't have a camera because I sold it in New York, so I had to come up with one pronto. So I call up my good Aussie friend Jeremy, who is a top photographer in Bangkok, and I explained my situation and asked him if he had a camera that I could borrow for this job. He told me, sure, come on over. So I go to his place, and he gives me a Nikon FM2 with a 50mm lens. No camera bag or any other equipment, just the camera with the 50mm lens attached and small enough to put in the pocket of my baggy shorts, which is exactly what I did. First of all, it was as good a camera as any and takes as good a photo, but it's simply not normal for a legitimate professional photographer who's about to shoot a naked girl on an island for Thai Penthouse Magazine to have so little equipment when going on such a shoot. But my state of mind and attitude back then was, so what? I was fearless and unstoppable. So Miriam and I go to the rendezvous point, and a van picks us up, and off we go to the ocean. The other photographer and his assistant, Thai people, of course, and the makeup artist and their model were in the van, and the other photographer had cases of equipment, multiple cameras, lenses, tripods, etc. And he asked me, "Where's your equipment?" So I reached into my pocket and I pulled it out. "Here." They looked at me like I was joking. I think they never took me seriously after that. It was a little embarrassing, I must admit. Anyway, after 2 hours or so, we get to the boat and head off to the island. And when we started to get kind of close, I asked the ladyboy makeup artist if she could start Miriam's makeup. It was around 4 p.m, which was my favorite light for shooting. At that time in my career, I would always shoot late afternoon sun, as that lighting makes the model look so great no matter what. The ladyboy makeup artist wasn't really happy about it and kind of gave me a bit of a dirty look as if I'm bothering her a bit and says, "You want me to put makeup on her now? You're going to shoot now?" So I said yes. She goes ahead and does Miriam's makeup. The Thai crew didn't plan on shooting on arrival as they were going to wait until the next day and thought we were nuts that we were planning on shooting as soon as we pulled in. I think their thought was get settled on arrival and shoot the next day, as we were going to be here for 2 or 3 days anyway. But to me, the light was perfect, so why wait? So we arrive, and the boat doesn't moor because there is no mooring. So we get off the boat, wade onto the island. Miriam and I put our stuff in our bungalow, and then we head back to the ocean. I direct Miriam out into the water in her bikini, and I start shooting her. At first in the bikini, both of us warming up, and then she starts stripping, taking off her top slowly and exposing her perfect big boobs. She looked hot, beautiful, sexy, and wet. The sun was at its most beautiful light. Miriam just glowed out there. Plus, she was Latina, so she had that natural, beautiful tan to go with her very beautiful body. So Miriam and I spent the next 2 days shooting all over the island by day, enjoying every second of it. And then at night, we'd all sit together enjoying each other's company while we ate the greatest Thai seafood meal you could ever imagine. So here's where you might say poetic justice comes in. When we got back to Bangkok, I delivered the 20 rolls of film to Penthouse, and guess what? When the next issue of Thai Penthouse comes out, that's the second issue, by the way, guess who's on the cover? Miriam, that's who. Just goes to show you that a ton of equipment doesn't mean squat. Here's that August 1994 Penthouse Magazine Thai Edition cover. And to end the chapter, this is regarding Jeremy Taylor. The guy who lent me the camera for the Thai Penthouse shoot was my very good Australian friend, Jeremy Taylor, whom I had met in Hong Kong along with his Thai wife a couple of years prior when we were both living there. Then we both ended up moving to Thailand from Hong Kong, and we stayed close friends, meeting regularly at a Wendy's Hamburgers in Bangkok. Jeremy was truly a professional photographer and worked big advertising-type photography jobs via ad agencies, etc. I mean, I was an amateur compared to Jeremy, who was a top commercial photographer in Bangkok with a great reputation and who worked constantly. He was the real deal. Apparently, from what I heard, his Thai wife was always cheating on him, having sex with different Thai men, and oddly enough, buying each one of them gold chains with Jeremy's money. Now, I have no idea if that is true, but that's what I was told, and I believe it. Most recently, his wife had been screwing around with the security guard at the condo where they were staying, where they were living, and Jeremy had finally had enough and kicked her out, as Jeremy was pretty much a no-nonsense guy. So apparently, his wife and this security guard decided to put a hit on Jeremy so they could basically get his truck, from what I was told, and hired a couple of Thais to ride up to Jeremy on a motorcycle and shoot him. So one night, Jeremy is attending a weekly Sunday dinner that he and a bunch of expats used to regularly attend, and when he left, a motorcycle rode up to him, and the two Thai guys grabbed him and shot him. My friend Freddie had attended the dinner that night that Jeremy was shot. So for him, it must have been a real shock when the cops came to their door with a bloody Polaroid of Miss Thailand, whom Jeremy had shot earlier in the day, asking if anyone knew whose Polaroid this is. Jeremy had showed the group the Polaroid earlier that night at dinner, as he had apparently photographed Miss Thailand earlier in the day. So yes, they knew who belonged to that Polaroid. Now, I'm not sure if this is exactly what went down, but that's what I was told, and I for one believe it. The way I found out about it was that Freddie had called me up from Bangkok as I was in Pattaya at the time, and he asked me if I had heard about Jeremy, and I told him no, and he says he was shot last night. And I said, is he okay? And Freddie says, no, he's not okay. He's dead. Almost like it was a dumb question. I didn't intend on going to the funeral as I was in Pattaya, and I'm not very big on funerals anyway, but Miriam and I returned to Bangkok a few days later, and the funeral hadn't taken place yet, so we ended up going. And when I saw his wife at the funeral, I went up to her and gave her a hug and consoled her and told her that if there was anything she needed, just let me know. Then later that week, I was watching TV, and there was a news report about the murder, and it showed her and the Thai guy being arrested. I always felt creepy thinking back to the funeral where I was rubbing her back and putting my arm around her and consoling her. Murder is very creepy when you see it up close. May you rest in peace, Jeremy. End of chapter. Chapter 83, Mexico City, Matamoros, and a coyote. Nicaragua and I stayed in Thailand for about a year this time around, as I was shooting both nude stuff for Thai Penthouse magazine and also fashion spreads for two or three fashion magazines in Bangkok. And Miriam was working both as a model and as my assistant during the photo sessions. But we decided that we had had enough and made the decision to move back to Miami Beach, where I would pick up where I left off shooting new faces for Irene's models, and Miriam could reunite with her family and play the work thing by ear. Now, the dilemma we were facing, as you probably recall, is the fact that Miriam didn't have a U.S. visa, which, of course, is a requirement for entering the United States. So I came up with this idea that we could fly to Mexico City and then a bus to the U.S.-Mexican border and then pay one of those Mexican coyotes to sneak Miriam into the U.S. All right, now check this out. Miriam and I used to hang out in this bar with this group of expats, if you will, and we had all become very good friends. And one guy in the little expat group of ours was a guy named Louis from Mexico. And Louis was a real piece of work and a great guy. We all loved him. And one day we're all hanging out as usual, and I say to Louis, hey, Louis, I've got to get Miriam back into the U.S., but she doesn't have a visa. If you were going to sneak somebody across the Rio Grande into the United States, where would you cross? And without hesitation, Louis says, Matamoros. Cross at Matamoros. Well, I trusted Louis, and if Louis says Matamoros, then Matamoros it is. So I booked our flight to Mexico City, and away we went. It's funny because that flight first landed in L.A., but we just went to the waiting area for our connection to Mexico City, knowing that Miriam couldn't enter the United States without a visa. Once we landed in Mexico City, as soon as we got off the plane, the authorities grabbed us and directed us to a room in the airport, sat us down, took our passports, and asked, where are you going? And I answered, we're going to Nicaragua for a holiday so that I can meet my wife's family. Then they asked, are you sure you're not going to the U.S.? And we said, no, absolutely not. We're going straight to Nicaragua. You know, to this day, I'm pretty sure that they didn't believe us, but they didn't have much choice. You know, why did they choose us out of the entire plane full of passengers? I think that we must have fit the pattern of somebody sneaking somebody into the U.S., and they were right, weren't they? They certainly had us pegged. So anyway, they released us, and we went straight to the nearest bus station and bought two tickets to Matamoros, which borders the United States at Brownsville, Texas. So we take the 23-hour, 1,000-mile bus ride from Mexico City to Matamoros, and when we got off the we got to the bus station in Matamoros, my next order of business was to see if I could find us a coyote to hire so that he could just do his thing and get Miriam home. So right away, I see a few guys just sort of leaning against the wall who seemed to fit the bill. And I approached one and I asked him if he could get my Nicaraguan wife Miriam across the river and into the U.S. And he said no problem and told me how much. And then he told us to meet him at the same place tomorrow at 7 a.m. So we get a room near the bus station. And the next morning, we head out to meet the coyote. By the way, we had one big fat suitcase and a couple of small bags, and I decided to leave the luggage in the room, and then after Miriam was safely in my arms in the United States, I would cross back over and get the luggage. I guess I didn't want to complicate something that already seemed complicated enough. On our way to our meeting with the coyote, I was checking out the U.S. town just across the Rio Grande, and I noticed a Pollo Loco restaurant. I said to Miriam, you see that Pollo Loco restaurant over there? And she says, sure, what about it? I said, that's where we'll meet. After I drop you off, I'll head right over there and sit at that outdoor seating area at the Pollo Loco, and I'll wait for you there. Okay with you? And Miriam says, okay, see you there. So we head out over to the bus station, and our man is there, and we say our holas or whatever, and I hand him his money, And I say adios and good luck, and they head off in one direction, and I head off in another. I wasted no time in making my way to the bridge, and then wasted no time getting across it and planting my feet on U.S. soil in a town called Brownsville, Texas. So I made my way to the Pollo Loco, and I go inside and order some food, then back outside to the seating area, and I take a seat and start to eat. After I get done eating, I just sat there blankly for a while, trying not to dwell on this thing because it doesn't help. Anyway, I checked the area out a bit, more to pass time than anything else, and then proceeded to wait for Miriam, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and now I'm worried sick. So then after 3 or 4 hours of waiting, I see Miriam about 100 yards away, wet and walking very slowly, no smile, and as she got closer, I noticed an expression on her face that I didn't recognize. She had a look on her face that I just can't even begin to describe. Well, right at that moment, it dawned on me that she very likely had been raped. Well, I'll never know because I never asked her, but it was one horrible moment. I don't know why I didn't ask her, but I didn't. Maybe I just didn't have the guts to hear her answer. But to this day, I believe that Miriam may very well have been raped. She looked broken and beaten. If you're reading this, Miriam, I was nothing less than an asshole to have put you through that very risky and dangerous situation. I played with your life, and all I can say is no wonder you left me that morning in Bangkok. I never would have changed. She told me later that once they got across the river, they joined a bunch of others that were hiding from Border Patrol that were all over the place, both in the tall grass and behind rocks, just waiting to make their move, and that the coyote suggested to her that she pay the guy next to her some money to go out and get caught by the Border Patrol, as that would eliminate that Border Patrol guy for the time being, as he would have to take him, the other guy, back and process him, thus clearing the way for her to make her getaway, or something to that effect anyway. So she paid the guy next to her to get caught, and the plan worked, actually. Well, the whole deal was complicated and risky and dangerous and stupid on my part to come up with it in the first place, and even stupider to think it could work. Had I even one brain cell, this crazy story never would have happened. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? Anyway, it was time for me to retrieve our luggage, so I hustled on over to the hotel and into our room, and voila, empty room. Our luggage had been stolen, but at that point, I couldn't have cared less in a way. The only problem was that I had brought all those original slides of those first 8 girls that I shot nude, mainly for the fun of it, but I was going to try to peddle them to some publisher somewhere. But hey, the stuff probably wasn't even good enough, so there. I can imagine when those robbers got back home, all excited, practically tearing the suitcase open and seeing all of that porn of mine. Ooh, I wish I could have seen their faces. A lot of jerking off was most likely in the cards for that little group of misfits. By the way, I misspoke when I said that they had emptied our room. They did leave one item behind, and that was my Levi jacket, which was hanging on the back of a chair, waiting for me to come and get her. So I put on my Levi jacket and headed on over the bridge and proceeded to walk all the way from Mexico to the United States. And I was pretty damn certain that that would be the last time that I would perform that task. So I made my way to our table, and I told Miriam that she should tear up her Nicaraguan passport and bury it deep into a full garbage can, because if Border Patrol happens to get on any of those buses for the purpose of finding a stowaway and they look inside your passport, they'll see that we've just flown from Bangkok, and they'll see that you don't have a proper visa and you'll be thrown to the wolves. So lose the passport, make your driver's license available, and if they ask us what we're doing down here, just say we were visiting your sister, who happens to live in Brownsville. And so she tore it up, buried it, and we were good to go. Chicago, here we come. By the way, the Border Patrol did check out our bus 3 different times and check people's paperwork. Told ya. That's a true story, my friends. Every word of it, exactly how I wrote it and how you heard it. Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great day.